Marcia Rader Brantley disappeared in 2009, and it took more than 6 months before she was reported as missing. As we develop the victim profile, let's dig into her personality, as well as the events that shaped her adult life. We have to go beyond the paltry image given in news reports or TV shows to find out if she was simply an introverted loner with shallow connections.
There are so many things on Facebook and on Reddit and different things where people speculate. And I feel like very few people really knew her. And I appreciate just a chance to be able to say, you know, I did know her. And she certainly made a difference in my life. Literally shifted the trajectory of my professional career. She's a very special person.
Welcome to Targeted, True Crime Podcast. We tell stories of those who were targeted by abuse and investigate cases of family violence using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. After learning about Marcia's early life, especially her mother's illness, how she put off college for nearly 10 years so that she could care for her mother, her family's intense spirituality that was certain God would provide, combined with a self-sufficiency in which they sought out treatments, we now move into Marcia's post-college life. Marcia does have some personality traits that seem a bit contradictory. On the one hand, people described her as fun. On the other, people described her as private and aloof. I was still trying to wrap my head around these when one of her colleagues from the 1990s told me I needed to think back to the royal family of England during the 80s and 90s. So I did. I remembered the event that captured my attention in the 80s, the courtship and marriage of Prince Charles and Diana Spencer, who was often called Shy Di at the time. Ah, I began to get it a little bit more. Marcia looked a bit like Princess Diana, tall, with a similar build, the same flaxen hair, sometimes feathered coyly to frame her eyes and cheekbones, other times in a more blunt pixie cut, highlighting Marcia's vitality. There was something a bit unattainable about Marcia, although also winsome. She even had some similar personality traits to Princess Di. A shy reserve that hid an underlying spirited spark, a professional tone she maintained for her work life, accompanied by an incredible kindness. Of course, there were aspects of Marcia that were nothing like Princess Di. I hope, though, that this analogy of Marcia to Princess Diana will help you as much as it helped me to understand the complexities of Marcia's personality traits, how the aloofness and privacy was also peppered with fire, spunk, and a concern for others.
Even her presence, you know, how she carried herself, like she could command a room, just her presence.
That was one of her best friends, Cricket. Now let's hear how Karen Phillips described her.
She was very beautiful as far as her radiance. When she walked into a room, you know, people would look up and see her and smile because she was always smiling. And I just really enjoyed being around her.
Her roommate, Andrea, reminisced about the more glamorous side of Marcia.
Probably one of the things that I really remember about Marcia, she was a very elegant dresser when she was going out or even to class, because back then, you know, we had a dress code. Ladies wore dresses or skirts to class. So there was a dress code. But Marcia, I thought she was just so amazingly fancy and expensive because she used Clinique makeup. And she would always spritz Shalimar perfume. I can still kind of smell that perfume. It was everywhere in the room.
I also spoke with Dr. Carolyn Dirksen, who worked with Marcia. And here's what she said about Marcia's personality.
I would like for her to be remembered as someone who was vivid and active and gregarious. She wasn't terribly introverted. I mean, I've heard her described as quiet. I'm like, well, I don't think she was very quiet. She was, you know, she wasn't like swinging from the rafters, but she wasn't a shrinking violet either, a wallflower. She was definitely involved in the conversation and setting the tone and very much a leader.
After Marcia graduated from college with a bachelor's in Christian education, she first worked as a youth pastor for about a year. She loved to work with young people, and she was devoted to her Christian faith. It wasn't long, though, before she learned of a position in student life as a resident director for a dorm at her old college. Some of her best friends from college were now working in this sector, so returning to the college and working with best friends seemed like a dream. What wasn't as idyllic, though, was that the two other friends had stayed at Lee and were already higher up on the career line than Marcia. So there was a bit of competitiveness, from what I understand, in which Marcia tried to do everything well. Perfect. Marcia tried to be noticed. In some ways, Marcia learned to bite back hesitancies and misgivings and throw herself headlong into whatever project she was given. The shades of perfectionism impacted Marcia's professional life. I spoke with one of her former colleagues, Angie, who worked under Marcia for a few years in student life. Here's what she recalled.
And maybe even a perfectionist mentality. And she was a favorite child and a loved child, but definitely a perfectionist mentality. Overall, as a director, she wanted to do well. She wanted to appear professional. And she was. She was organized, disciplined. For example, I remember we were selling something for the dorm to raise some money, maybe for missions or something. I thought it was going to be a small project, but it was huge. Because she had that mindset of doing something big and well. And she wanted to do that and teach them how to do that as well. So she was on this path professionally, wanting to excel professionally and find favor from administration.
So Marcia worked very hard to make sure the work she did was as close to perfection as she could, both in strategy as well as execution. When there were problems or challenges, Marcia didn't necessarily talk about them. Her friend Cricket mentioned this to me when we interviewed.
She was a strong woman. I mean, she's always been able to pick up something, and whatever she picks up, she does well at. When she put her mind to something, she did it. You know, if that was important to her, she would do that. Tenderhearted, but strong. You know, that like, I'm handling it, I'm dealing with it, you know, and I don't want to share that part. But she was private in some areas. You know, she wanted you to know, she let you know, and she didn't.
Dr. Carolyn Dirksen was in the academic sector, but knew Marcia for well over 15 years. Recalling this time, Dr. Dirksen said,
she was very efficient at doing her work, and she was one of those people who could be visionary and yet detailed, which is kind of a hard combination. So she could think up this whole new program, but she could check off all the boxes too and make sure everything was done and everything was thought through. She was very, very insightful in that way.
As a resident director, or RD, as it's often called, Marcia lived in the dorm and supervised the entire dorm with hundreds of students. To help, she had two grad students as assistant RDs who helped her supervise a number of undergraduate resident assistants, or RAs, and those RAs were each in charge of a floor or a wing of a dorm. So there were a lot of people who worked under Marcia and helped her with taking care of these hundreds of students who lived in the dorm. When I interviewed Angie, we talked about when she served as an assistant RD under Marcia. She was a grad student at Lee, and this provided her a chance to have free housing and some work experience while she was getting her master's. She was able to fill me in about the stage of Marcia's life.
She really liked having the RAs around her every night. I think she felt that she was investing in their lives. She would have them come and meet with her every night, and she seemed to enjoy that. She really, really did enjoy that, but very committed to the devotional life. Meeting together every night would include a devotion, and then they would talk about the girls in the dorm, and then they would go out to each door and knock on each door, because that's what we did back then, knock on each door and make sure that the students were in the dorm and had met curfew. But it was really the sense of teaching them how, for example, if we had social events in the dorm, they were included. Now, she was very much the person who was supervising, but she allowed them to help in that and learn how to do projects, because she had done a lot of this as a youth pastor.
I also spoke with another colleague of Marcia's, Anthony. Anthony worked with Marcia in a variety of positions over a few years, and this is what he said.
I think a lot of people arrived at faulty conclusions about her because of her exterior. And I'll tell you, she was an advocate. She cared. She was so sensitive to those who were underserved or underprivileged people. I hope you hear more stories about that, because those are the stories that, when I think of Marcia, those are the stories that really resonate with me.
We'll hear more from Anthony in a bit to hear how Marcia advocated for him in particular. Andrea described it this way.
I never really saw her being negative with other people. She would always stand up for other people. If she felt that someone else was being just, I don't want to use the word bully, but being a negatively perceived or something, she would always take up for the underdog.
It wasn't unusual for Marcia to take one or two students under her wing and mentor them fairly intensely. She poured into them and didn't seem to expect anything in return, except perhaps the hope that these young adults would do well in their lives. She showed care for the students. Dr. Dirksen recalled how Marcia would step in and aid one of the students who had physical challenges.
Lisa, as you know, was born without arms or legs. And so we didn't have a lot of students with disabilities of any kind at that time. In the campus, we were only working on making it accessible. So when Lisa came, it was really a big challenge. And of course, she needed a lot of in-room services. And when her caregiver was sick, or, you know, lots of things can happen. And Marcia was really great backup for her, really good backup. And so Lisa loved her time at Lee. She always remembers it really fondly, and a lot of that was just feeling secure in her housing situation.
Marcia worked hard, but she also enjoyed her time off. Marcia would spend free time off hiking in the Cherokee National Forest, rafting on the Ocoee River, or biking in the Smoky Mountains. Many of her friends talked about trips they took and the adventures they had. They described the events, often laughing while reminiscing. The problem for me is that all of these clips each take a couple minutes to play, and I couldn't figure out how to edit them down shorter because they often meander, and they don't always come across as fun when friends talked about things such as Marcia meeting their grandmother or running from a bear. So I have lots of audio in which people mused about having such fun with Marcia, but it doesn't necessarily translate as fun unless you were there. Here's a quick collage of a couple things that people said.
We just giggled and laughed.
And we laughed so hard. We just got in the car and left. But we laughed.
It was just me and her hanging out, having a good time, but her appreciating.
I had so much fun with Marcia.
She was just laughing hysterically about it.
We had a good time, and it was fun getting to share.
So we all laughed about that.
I remember laughing. We laughed a lot, a lot.
Marcia adored dogs, and once she became RD, or the resident director, of a dorm, she adopted Barney, a chocolate and tan dachshund pup. He lived right in the dorm with her, and she trained him to do tricks, including one where Barney would quote-unquote pray by raising his front legs and lowering his head. Marcia would refer to Barney as her kid, and she adored this little pup. Marcia always had dogs up until the time that she disappeared, and later we'll talk about this a bit more, because one of the unusual things is that when Marcia disappeared, her three dogs were left behind, something that nobody thinks Marcia would have done. After serving as an RD at Lee in charge of one dorm, Marcia was promoted to be the Director of Housing and Residential Life, in which she was now in charge of all of the dorms on campus. By now, Marcia decided she wanted to be at Lee College long term. She wanted her professional life to be intertwined with the college she had attended and loved so much. Her parents supported her in this, and since Marcia no longer needed to live in a dorm herself to supervise it, her dad decided to build her a house, a hillside ranch just about a 7-minute drive from the college. Everyone who knew Marcia at this time talks about Marcia and her dad building the house together. As I was talking to everyone, I kind of assumed that this meant that they had drawn up some plans and hired some contractors. It wasn't until later, as I'm reviewing all of my interviews, that I was struck by the direct noun and verb choices. Marcia and her dad built her house. It wasn't that they designed the house. It wasn't that they commissioned the house. But they were both physically present working on the house. Once I realized this, I did check it out. And yes, indeed, she and her dad built the house. But they were involved in the physical construction of her house. The labor they poured into the house was a manifestation of the love that her parents had for Marcia, and she, in return, loved this house. It is the same house that she lived in after she married Donnie. It is the same house that she disappeared from. No one can imagine that Marcia would have ever left this house that she and her father built. When Marcia drove into the driveway of the house that she and her dad built together, her heart would sing just because the sight of the red bricks or the rocking chair porch evoked memories of her loving father who worked so hard to provide for Marcia. Marcia's parents had quietly loved her and supported her through childhood and adult life, and Marcia tried to do this for others as well. For example, when roommate Andrea moved into Marcia's dorm, Marcia chose to give Andrea the only bed, and Marcia chose to sleep on a futon instead. I learned that Marcia was someone who advocated for people, and often they didn't even know it was happening. I spoke with Anthony, who I mentioned earlier. He told me about how Marcia helped him, which he didn't know at the time.
One of the things that I found out was that my residence director was going to be graduating from the university. And I found out that she told him to tell me to apply for his job, that she had heard great things about it. And so it was really interesting, and I was a bit taken aback by it. Well, I ended up getting the job as residence director, and Marcia became my immediate supervisor. So basically, you know, she was an advocate for me, and I had no idea that this was happening behind the scenes. I think that she cared very deeply about student life at Lee.
I mentioned earlier that Marcia cared for people. One of her best friends, Cricket, told me about something Marcia had done for her.
Like I said, she was like an older sister to me. And when I moved to Pennsylvania, I had given my car away, and she wanted to make sure I had a vehicle while I moved because I was going to work at a Christian drug and alcohol treatment center. She jumped right in there. She's very giving, a giving person, you know, as a friend, as a sister, that wanted to make sure I was going to be okay, and she wanted to play a role in that. That's just the type of person she was.
Evidently, serving as a director over thousands of students can be a pretty intense job. You are responsible for the well-being of so many, but you don't necessarily have the hands-on interaction with the students, which is where Marcia seemed to find her joy.
She wanted to stay connected with Lee University, period. I just know that the director of residential life can be a very stressful job. I had three different directors I worked with, her, Tony, and then Tracy. I just remember Marcia had a lot of stress with that job, with the responsibilities, expectations, and stuff. But she loved college-age students. She loved being in a Christian school, that setting, the whole nine yards. I just remember that switch over to creating commuter services. And again, because it was dealing with students and trying to meet needs that were on the campus at the time. So I can see her doing that because she's a helper. She's got the gift of helps, definitely. I can see her. And then, of course, like I said, it wasn't there before. And then she created that within that position.
So after a few years as the director of housing and residential life, Marcia was looking for a change. Marcia set her mind to creating a new position at Lee, one that would serve commuter students rather than those who lived on campus. When I spoke with Dr. Carolyn Dirksen, who went on to become the academic vice president for Lee, she described the new position that Marcia created.
Lee had pretty much been a residential campus, but as we grew, we had more and more students who either came from Cleveland or who stayed in the dorm for a couple of years and then got an apartment, which then became the norm. So they were going from all control and all, you know, somebody looking after them every minute to just living in an apartment. No one cares. So we felt like there needed to be some sort of transition. So they needed to have somebody to go to. They didn't have an RA anymore or an RD, and so they needed somebody to go to if they had problems. Marcia became that. And I think she was really gifted at that. And it was almost a precursor to the community relations person, because sometimes it's a matter of they get in trouble with their landlord. And so you go to the landlord and try to talk it out and figure out how to solve their problem, or they're not getting help from the landlord and their roof is leaking or their electricity's off or whatever. And so she was sort of an ombudsman for them, even in that way, but also just providing programming around all that. And there was a commuter lounge in the PCSU and that sort of thing. I remember she coordinated a program where faculty would take commuter kids home for a meal. So she set that all up. We signed up if we were willing to do it. And then she got the kids to sign up on the other side, match us together. You know, just kind of thinking through what would help kids who lived off campus.
Some of her friends told me Marcia had to sell the idea of this new position to the administration, and she succeeded. I think it was a bit of a badge of honor for her circle of friends to trailblaze to create new offices and services at Lee. The college was in a time of incredible growth and was able to innovatively plan for new ways to serve students. The president of the college was a strong, charismatic leader who would empower promising staff who had a vision. From speaking with Marcia's friends, it seemed that Marcia may have felt a little bit competitive to be one of those who drew the attention of the president. It's hard to describe, but the president has what I call the gift of beneficence. When he looks at you straight in the eye, nods his head, smiles, and says, "Well done," you feel as if any sacrifice you made, hundreds of hours of work, had all been time well invested. At least I felt this way when I worked at Lee under him, and so have dozens of my colleagues. Putting my experience together with Marcia's friends' recollections, I think she did too. It's an important idea because Marcia was someone who worked hard, worked long hours, was self-driven to invest her energy, and didn't expect immediate reward. The bonus could come days, weeks, months after the work, and could be as brief as a nod and a smile from the male authority figure. But it would be enough. Imagine now how this work experience could have, unfortunately, accidentally, conditioned her to work on a romantic relationship, time, energy, sacrifice, accepting the reward of only a very small gesture. In the case of a college president with thousands of staff, a smile and a few bon mots or good words, are reasonable rewards. In the case of a romantic partner, though, it should not be enough. Earlier, we heard from Anthony, who told us Marcia was an advocate. We'll hear more from him, because when Marcia moved to commuter services, she already knew who she thought would be the perfect person to take over her job as Director of Housing and Residential Life.
We're all in the same business of trying to create an environment that's transformational, that's life-changing for students. So I did this job for a semester, maybe even two semesters. I can't recall. It was a while ago. And I ended up finding out from her that she was going to be stepping down from Director of Residential Life. And strongly encouraged by she to apply for her role, essentially. So she encouraged me to apply for this position. And she became the director of commuter services.
As I spoke with Anthony Moore, he emphasized how Marcia had impacted his life positively from when he was hired as a student RA and when he became a resident director until the time when she endorsed him as her replacement for the director of student life. Yet she had done this all quietly, never even letting him know or looking for acknowledgement from him.
I worked with Marcia. I came from a situation where college wasn't even on my radar. Because of Marcia, not only was I able to go to college, but have most of my tuition covered. It set me on a professional career in higher education and then ultimately in the corporate world. And it's because she took a chance on me. She got to know me and I got to know her and she believed in me. And I just wish that more people got to know her like that. There's so many things on Facebook and on Reddit and different things where people speculate. And I feel like very few people really knew her. And I appreciate just a chance to be able to say, you know, I did know her and she certainly made a difference in my life. Literally shifted the trajectory of my professional career. She's a very special person.
We've already talked about Marcia having some perfectionist tendencies, her care and advocacy for others, as well as her ability to work hard while not needing a lot in return. Next, I want to talk about her spiritual life, because this intertwines so closely with her decisions later. She was raised in a Christian family where trusting God was emphasized without needing immediate satisfaction. You prayed and you waited, and God would help you while you waited. Her roommate, Andrea, said this faith alone was enough to show that Marcia would not have gone off on her own by voluntarily disappearing.
Every time we spoke, Marcia was devoted. Now, she was devoted to her friends. She was there to help them and encourage. She was clearly devoted to her parents. But most of all, she was devoted to her God. Even the books that she was planning on writing and editing, she was weaving in there things she had planned on doing the young adult novels in a Christian-based format. That's what she had told me. It was always about the ministry and always about how can I allow people to see the light of God in me so that they would want to also have that in their own life. I don't feel like she would feel like she was actually following her own purpose and pathway if she just disappeared. She wouldn't be able to promote the idea of Christ and his ministry and his salvation and grace by disappearing. That's just my personal opinion. You know, I think that purpose ran through everything she did.
Marcia's faith was so strong that it earned a...
Of course.
From Angie, who had worked with Marcia.
Of course, she was committed to the Lord. Marcia was very committed to the Lord.
Anthony said,
Marcia was driven by a very, very strong moral compass. She, as I said before, had a quiet faith, but she was a person that believed in expressing her faith through actions more so than proclaiming them verbally. You know, at Lee University, it's a Pentecostal institution, and sometimes people can be very loud with their expression of faith. And the louder you are, the more spiritual you might be. Marcia was a very quiet person with that. I also will say this. Marcia was, I believe, a traditionalist. And so as much as she was a strong woman and she was absolutely an independent woman, I believe that she was a conservative Protestant Christian, and I believe that she supported those ideals.
At the same time Marcia had an overt faith, she also became disillusioned with organized religion. It didn't affect her belief in God. It just impacted her dislike or distrust of others who purported to be Christians. She was also upset by some of her denomination and even the Christian college who used religiosity as a tool to get their way. As I understand it, Marcia was not a member of the church for the last years of her life. Even so, her faith was important. Her best friend Kim talked a bit about this.
Marcia was not, I mean, they went to church some, but she was not into the church thing. She hated the Church of God, and I mean hated. And she had really pulled away from that church world, not Christianity and not God necessarily, not that, but as far as the church and the religiosity and the organized religion, she wanted no part of, no part of. She was a fabulous person, and she had morals, and she believed in God. But her experience with all that left her with a very bad taste in her mouth.
Marcia vaguely addressed this in a blog post she wrote about swearing.
April 3rd, 2008. I swear. I don't use the cheap words. I use the really bad ones and haven't been hit with a lightning bolt as of this post. I grew up in an unforgiving church under the strict thumb of a mother who believed everything the dear church told her, and she passed it down to me. Well, actually, she shoved it down my throat. It was years before I could pull enough of the teachings of the church out of my throat to realize that when a whopper of a bad word came out of my mouth, I wasn't sent flying into the hot place. I was made to believe, however, that I had Crisco on my butt and would slide rapidly until the devil's domain when my time came. I've grown since then and realized words really are powerful no matter which ones we use. I hear high and mighty people use lesser words all the time, which are accepted by the religious folks. But let me say shit in thy faint. Come on, it's just a word. I'm going for a walk now and will try to keep my mouth clean even if a car careens towards me, nearly missing me. Who knows? I may find out if Crisco really has been applied.
The last trait we need to talk about is Marcia's private side. As kind, giving, innovative, and driven as she was, Marcia also withheld a part of herself and kept it separate, even from the best of her friends. It's a recurring theme that I heard in my interviews, all the way from Marcia's college roommate to those who interacted with her during her last months in 2009. Roommate Andrea said,
as I was thinking about Marcia, one of the things that I realize now was that she was kind of guarded, not in a bad way or even a deliberate way about her past or about who she was. She just didn't talk much about herself at all.
Angie, who worked under Marcia, said,
she was reserved, but my impression is when you knew her, she would share. In as much as she was reserved, she was maybe an introverted extrovert. She could be around large crowds, and then at the same time, she liked her quiet space. She liked her solitude.
Marcia McDonald Swearingham described this aspect of Marcia like this.
She was kind of a cool and a distant person in a lot of ways. I liked her a lot, and I had a lot of admiration and respect for her. But she was kind of aloof a little bit, cool and aloof. Not, I don't think intentionally that was just maybe her personality.
Writing friend Reggie J described it this way.
Marcia was a very private person. She could have what I call a taciturn appearance. She would let you know about her to a certain point, and then, you know, she wasn't very transparent. You had to kind of get to know her for her to open up and talk to you a little bit.
Anthony talked about this side of Marcia as well.
few things that I'd say about her is that Marsha, and this might be a little bit consistent with some of the things that you've heard, but I will say that Marsha did have an emotional barrier that surrounded her. It was a bubble. Many people would have considered that impenetrable, something that could not be pierced. So I think that in many cases, Marsha was misunderstood. She didn't exude warmth and kind of an invitational demeanor. The other thing that I would say, though, at the same time, is that she exuded, with this tough exterior, she also exuded strength. She wouldn't necessarily have a big smile on her face. She wouldn't be the kind of person who would greet you with a hug, especially if she didn't know you. But there was tremendous love there. There was tremendous kindness in her. It just wasn't a demonstrative type of thing on the outside. I think she was misunderstood by a lot of people, including her professional colleagues. And unless you had those one-on-one conversations, unless you got her talking about her dogs, or her parents, or biking, you know, she loved biking. That was a huge hobby of hers. And so if you got her talking about that stuff, you know, she would really kind of light up. That's very relative for her, but you could tell that she was really excited.
Marsha's best friend, Kim, described her as private and as a one-on-one person. And after more than 30 hours of interviews, I think this might be one of the most briefly accurate of descriptions.
There was a very private side to her that a lot of people didn't know. She was very private, I would say. She was very strong-willed, and she had a very sensitive side. She was private. I think the biggest thing is she was a very much a one-on-one person. She didn't have a ton of friends. She had a lot of people she knew and that knew her, but she didn't get close to very many people. She was very private, and I was really flattered that I was part of her inner circle as I was.
Note again that Kim felt special, that she was part of Marsha's circle. I got this feeling from many of the people I spoke with. When they were a part of Marsha's inner circle, there was something where they felt they were receiving a special gift, that Marsha was special, and her noticing them made them special too. And this again reminded me of Princess Diana, because I think many people felt special when she smiled, when she bestowed her gift of beneficence on someone. Despite her need for privacy, I think as you should be able to tell, Marsha was not someone who was alone. Dr. Carolyn Dirksen discussed this a little bit.
I would definitely not describe her as a loner. I don't think you can be in residential life and be able to withstand that and be a loner. I mean, she was surrounded by people 24/7 when she was in res life. And then, you know, she didn't leave student life. The student life is no place for serious introverts. You got to entertain students. You got to take students' needs upon yourself and try to solve them. And she was right in the middle of that. And she had a very strong friend group, people that she stood up for and that stood up for her and that did things together outside of work. So I could never see her as a loner. I mean, you know, she had her personal space, but I think everyone does. I wouldn't describe her as a loner.
Private, but not a loner. To those whom Marsha befriended, they felt special. They had been chosen. Although it does seem that there was also a time when they might become unchosen. And then the friendship would lapse into occasional phone calls, letters, or emails. It was while Marsha was working in her newly created job as director of commuter services that she met Donnie Brantley and married him. Her parents both died during Marsha's first year of marriage, and Marsha inherited everything. The financial impact meant that Marsha could essentially retire quite early, in her 40s, and turn her focus to becoming a published author of young adult fiction. Her inheritance potentially could have lasted her entire life, since she had a house that was completely paid for, and she could live off the interest of the money that had been left to her. And no, if you're wondering about her parents dying so soon after she married, it is unlikely that Donnie was involved. Both Marsha's mom and dad were already ill, and both seemed to have natural deaths. Let's now put together what we've learned about Marcia and apply it to what we know about her relationship with Donnie. She was kind, caring, giving to the point of making sure a friend of hers had a car, and she didn't ask for quid pro quo. She was a helper, having spent much of her career aiding others. She advocated quietly, not letting others know when she was fighting for them behind the scenes. She had significant connection to her Christian faith, but had become disillusioned with organized religion. While she was private, she was not a loner. I opened up this episode with the comparison of Marcia to Princess Diana. Both seemed to experience difficult marriages in which they were not appreciated by their husbands. The princess was able to leave her marriage, but Marcia did not. Did she even consider divorce as an option? Or had her experience and character led her to believe that she had to endure through it, assuming that one day she would be able to find the right recipe to fix the marital problems? All she had to do was to wait, to work hard, and to pray. Early on in the miniseries, I told you I like to examine a case from multiple angles, looking at various facets that create a person's life. I hope we've done this. By looking at Marcia's last months in 2009 and developing a profile of her, we've been steadily shifting to examine from a multitude of angles. Next week, we'll zoom out our focus to domestic violence and find out if a strong and independent woman such as Marcia can become the victim of domestic violence. We won't be hearing many clips of the interviews during the next section as we focus more on research and apply it to what we've learned about Marcia. I think you'll find the research somewhat counterintuitive at first, but I think it will make sense as we explore it. The crux of it is, strong, independent women are exactly the type of person who can become trapped in a domestic, violent relationship. Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted True Crime Podcast. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. If you want to connect on social media, I'll include links in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me via email, you can do that at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is a survivor of domestic violence, you are not alone. There are resources available to you. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a few organizations. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, so I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. Getting help may be the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.